Right now we are going to talk about the 1970s, although it's a bit of a stretch because this is a building that was conceived in the 60s through a competition, but eventually was completed in the 70s and it was also awarded and recognized several awards during that period. And it's also designed by a firm that was really active during the period. We are now in front of the state government offices, or the complex known as Treasury Place, the Treasury Precinct, which includes some historical buildings of the 1800s, like the old Treasury building, and a complex of two office buildings, a low-rise part, which is still the current residence of the Premier.
The Premier.
And an office block, a tower of 15 stories, not too tall for the period of the time.
Yeah, these buildings, as you say, Giorgio, they government ran a competition in about 1962. So it took a long time to realise that happens with government projects. And the competition was won by Barry Patton from Young and Freeman Architects, as you say, very highly regarded Melbourne architects, who were responsible for a lot of amazing buildings in Melbourne, a lot of which are still here and still some of Melburnians' favourite buildings. One of the interesting things, architects often don't adhere to the brief, and Patton decided that he wasn't going to do what the brief demanded, which was to design a building of soaring wonderment. And in his opinion, as through his site analysis, this building sits between, the lower of these buildings sits between two very important heritage buildings from the Victorian period. And so he felt that where the Premier sits should not overshadow the heritage buildings. So taking the view from Collins Street up towards Old Treasury, his decision was to drop the building right down so it wasn't visible. So the first step on the site was the smaller scale building where the Premier sits, New Treasury Building. And then the second building, which we call a companion building, is of the 15-storey high-rise, which was the government offices that was sitting adjacent. So it's a campus of buildings rather than the single tower of soaring wonderment. It That's becomes right. a campus. And it's also been called almost a monument to government, because it sets up a network of pathways. It connects the existing historic buildings occupied, still occupied by government, some occupied by Commonwealth government. So the precinct has been occupied by government since the, you know, more than 150 years on this site.
And this was a very intelligent decision from the part of the architect, as you said, but also unusual for the time, because it was not unusual, on the other hand, to knock down historical buildings and put a high-rise building in within the CBD, but also on the immediate areas adjacent to the CBD. So it was quite daring at the same time, also very lungimirant, or very, you know, ahead of their time in understanding a more urban-sensitive approach for a building.
I think
of this
there
kind.
Were a lot of architects doing tall buildings, high-rise buildings, that were accused of doing monuments to themselves. And I think one of the great skills of Barry Patton and his firm were their idea of being a bit of a backdrop to the way a city operates. They didn't shout, their buildings didn't shout. And as you say, it becomes a legacy that is still here, that is almost still current. And the thing that makes it sit so nicely in its precinct are really intelligent design decisions, like the scale of the windows, which pick up the proportions, the scale, the kind of rhythm of the existing heritage buildings, but in a very, very modernist hand. But because of the reading of the precinct and the way it sits with the heritage buildings, yeah, it's a legacy. It still works really well.
Yeah. And maybe we should say something about the techniques of construction of this particular building, right? Because it was also innovative in the use of precast concrete.
They're quite radical at the time. It's a load-bearing concrete wall around the perimeter, which was very unusual construction technique.
And also a choice of material is interesting because, as you pointed out, Jill, there's a relationship between the fenestration and historical presence that gives a classic sense. And the material they were used, even if it was concrete, the concrete was enriched with aggregates of real stone that once honed or polished give a almost a feeling of a sandstone building, even if it is actually a relatively much cheaper technological solution done with precast concrete. And in some instances, you can see also how this has been treated to the extent that you might think you have a stone wall, like in the ground floor plinth, where there's this very dark wall that looks like probably marble or granite, but in essence is actually precast that has been polished.
So the whole building is precast. So very early precast, very skillful design of precast panels in a time where we weren't expert at it. And then they have that load-bearing capacity as well.
And the budget wasn't too high, I understand. It was the equivalent of $100 million of today to do the entire complex, which was quite an achievement. So
I think so. Yeah. And I think the like the Shell building that we've just visited, this accepts itself as a part of a city precinct and it is part of a campus. You can walk between the buildings, around the buildings, through the buildings, join in with the city streets around. There's staircases that link different levels. It's a precinct rather than just a single sort of statement building sitting in a plaza.
And a backdrop of press conferences as well, right?
Oh, yes. The press conferences always take place here. And the way it sits and looks at the Treasury Gardens inside this building is absolutely beautiful as well.